being played. We're all being taken for a ride. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of American Exposé. Darren Weeks here with you on the 29th of April, 2005. This is the Friday broadcast. Lindsey Williams was on last night and the night before that. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Good to hear him back again. The information that he has is of utmost importance, and it needs to be heard. Every American needs to hear this information. We've been sharing with you folks from a book called The Energy Non-Crisis, which was written by Lindsey Williams, and it was interesting to hear him say a lot of the stuff that we've been saying all along. Confirmation from somebody who was there, somebody who knows firsthand the scamming that's going on, the orchestration of various crises, including the Hegelian energy situation that we have going on today. And it's not going to change. It's only going to get worse. And, I mean, we're approaching, folks, a brave new world. I think we're already there, really. And it's a cause for concern. And the only way that I see for us to be able to make a difference is to wake up massive amounts of people as quickly as possible. And the small numbers that we have listening to this broadcast, and the broadcasts that we do, it doesn't have to be so small. If every person who was within the sound of my voice could spread the word to one person, we'd double our audience. And that's the important thing, is never underestimate the power of numbers. Because numbers can accomplish things where ordinarily they wouldn't be accomplished. And we have to spread the information. We have to learn all we can. And that's our purpose as we continue sharing this information from the Energy Non-Crisis. I want to give you the toll-free number, folks. It's 800-321-2900. 800-321-2900. And I strongly encourage you to order Lindsey's videos. I don't remember what the price is on the videos, but I'm sure if you'll call the number, they'll let you know. And he has made an offer that if you buy a video, he will give you one of his books for free. He has four videos, coming out with a fifth, I guess, from what he says. And if you buy those videos, every video that you buy, you get a free book to go with it. And I think that's an incredible deal, especially considering that I have all of his books, and I can tell you that the information that he has in these books, these are very easy to read books. It's not like going on the UN website and you know, the wording that they choose is about as difficult as they can make it, because they don't want you to go on there and decipher. The information they have is supposed to only be for those who are conditioned by universities to be able to decipher. You know, the rest of us aren't supposed to be interested in it. And so they choose their wording very carefully so they don't wake up the masses who might happen to stumble upon their website. But Lindsey wants the information to be understood, so it's in very plain and easy to read. Anybody can understand this information. So I strongly encourage you. It's an easy read. All of his books are easy reads. And we're promoting them so much because, frankly, folks, we got to get the information out. So it's 1-800-321-2900, 800-321-2900. And, of course, Lindsey will be back on the broadcast, I'm certain, soon. And, folks, I got to tell you also, Chris Gerner is expanding to WWCR, Melody Cedarstrom, and has purchased some airtime. Her website, by the way, discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And she has purchased some shortwave time, and we'll be giving those frequencies and times a little later on in the broadcast. Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we go ahead and do that now so that in case we get going, I might forget, and I don't want to do that. But the frequency will be on 7.465, and he'll be on this Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Now, Wednesday, it'll only be the next couple of Wednesdays. He's going to be on for the next couple of Wednesdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Central Time, so that would be 7 to 9 Eastern, and you can do the adjustments according to your particular time zone. But anyway, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern the next two Wednesdays on 7.465. And then Tuesday and Thursday, on an ongoing basis, it'll be from 7 to 8 p.m. Central, so that'll be 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. On 7.465, Chris Gerner will have, and he'll probably be having Lindsey Williams on at least the Wednesday broadcast, I believe, when he has a couple of hours. We'll be posting that information, by the way, if it's not already on the website. we'll be posting that information. It should already be there. 7.465 WWCR. So that's it. We're hopefully expanding. The information hopefully will be heard by many. And we encourage you folks to spread the word, because this is of utmost importance. All right, I've already burnt 7 minutes of the broadcast. I want to get back into the information from the energy non-crisis, folks, because it's very important to cover. Now, what we're going to be covering tonight is, I think, one of the most crucial things for you to hear. We're going to be talking about Gull Island today, what happened there, the oil find that they did, and how the federal government wouldn't allow them to develop that. And we're going to get as far as we can with this. And I think Monday, I think I'm going to be covering the Law of the Seas Treaty, because there's a lot of other information going on, despite the fact that this oil thing has come to prominence because of the high gas prices. There's still the other plans, the other parts of the agenda go forward. So we're going to be covering the Law of the Seas Treaty on Monday. So for those of you who want to know what's going on with that, I have some information I'm going to be sharing. So I strongly encourage you to tune in on Monday. At any rate, let's move forward. Lindsey was talking about how he likes to ride with oil executives. And for background, folks, I don't want to go and give all the background all over again. So if you just happen to tune in for the first time, you'll have to listen to the archives or order the book if you want the whole background with this, because I don't want to waste too much time here at the outset going back and reviewing everything. Basically, real briefly, Lindsey was chaplain on the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline back in the early 1970s when it was being built. He went there for spiritual reasons, to help counsel the people, because he figured this was a great opportunity to shine the light of Christ. But while he was there, he learned a whole lot of information that he didn't count on learning. And that's where we're at today. Information about how the insanity of federal regulations prevent the oil companies from developing the oil fields. And without going into too much background, he discovered that the only logical explanation for this happening was that they just didn't want the oil to flow. They wanted America to be crippled, to be dependent on foreign oil. And as Lindsey says, they made an agreement with the Arab world that the Arabs would delineate, or you know, deal with American dollars, so that they could turn around and buy American debt, and that would help to finance all of the warring effort, this war machine that we have going on today, which is helping to accomplish or establish this one world government that George Herbert Walker Bush called a New World Order. And so with that as background, and I think I covered that similarly to what he said, I think it was an accurate representation of what he said, because I certainly don't want to put words in his mouth. But I want to continue here with his information. He says, I liked to get up in one of those big dozers, or get up into one of those big trains, or stand and chat with a man while he was waiting for his buddy to finish welding a section of the pipe. As I was riding around, if someone simply said, hi, Chaplain, it was a contact. That was my reason for being there. My purpose primarily was to help those men spiritually, and this other interest in the government's intention was secondary, but very important nonetheless. So almost every day I would ride over to ARCO, as I had done this morning. Usually the security guard would tell me of a half a dozen officers, and I would have a wide choice of riding companions. One day I would ride with the equipment man, another day with Mr. X, and another day I might ride with an inspector. They were always quite interesting, but most of them did not want too much to do with me personally. They knew, on short order, that I was a conservative, and I usually did not know There was a paperclip covering my page here. I usually did not kowtow to their ideas of control. However, that day, the security office named several men, and I immediately recognized one that I thought would be interesting to ride with. So I said, "Well, is he in his office or out in his vehicle?" The guard answered, "Well, he happens to be up in his office. Why don't you just go on in? I'm sure he won't mind." So I took the liberty of going on down to the office complex and into the office of this certain ARCO executive. He looked up as I came in, and all across his face was an air of expectancy, though at first I did not take much notice. That is usually the way these oil executives look when they see dollar signs turning over with the oil business. I looked at him with kind of a smile on my face. I was feeling good with that beautiful sunshine outside, which we didn't see all the time in the Arctic Ocean. I said, "Hey, what do you have up today?" "Ah," he said, you came just at the right time. How would you like to watch something exciting? It's something that I think will turn out to be phenomenal." "Well," I answered, "I'm always ready for excitement. If there's anything I enjoy, it's getting into something. Of course, that's nothing new," he says. "Ever since I had been a child, if I could find something to get into..." I just couldn't seem to pass up the opportunity. So I said, "Sure, what can we get into today?" With something that was almost laughter in his voice, he said, "Chaplain, come on. Let's ride out to the Arctic Ocean, and I'll show you what we're going to get into today." I could tell from the tone in his voice that I was in for something spectacular. "Well," I said, "great, let's go. I'm ready for a ride. We have all morning, and if you like, I can take all afternoon with you as well. That is, if it really gets that good." He answered, "This one is going to be good." I asked, "What do you mean?" He says, "Come on, let's go." We walked all the way down the hallway of that office complex past the security guard, and my guide told him, "If you want me, I'll be at such and such a point in such and such a vehicle." We checked out and walked out into the out the freezer locker door into the freezer, that is the Arctic, and soon we had hopped inside his vehicle and were driving west, maybe for 4 or 5 miles. Then he turned towards the north, and now he asked, "Chaplain, have you ever been out to the new dock, the dock at Prudhoe Bay?" "Yes," I answered. "I have taken the liberty to drive up there a time or two just to see what it's like." "Well," he answered, "that's where we're going." There were two docks at Prudhoe Bay. They would dock the flotilla of boats that came in the summertime. One was the original dock, which had been built by Surfcoat Camp, and the dock extended only a short way out to the Arctic Ocean. The ocean at that point was only a few feet deep. In order to bring in the larger barges that were in the flotilla during the last 2 years of the construction phase of the oil field, they had to go out into deeper water. After much wrangling and many battles, the oil companies were finally able to persuade the government to permit them to build a gravel pad, exactly like the gravel on the shore of the Arctic Ocean. It was a gravel pad out into the water, some 2 miles or thereabouts. It was just large enough for one of those track vehicles to travel on. The vehicles that would that bring the flow stations, the pump stations, and injection plants, after that they had been brought in on the flotilla. They had huge things that I like to call creepy crawlers, and the tracked vehicles would carry those big buildings when they wanted to unload them from the barges. So we rode out on that gravel bar extending into the Arctic Ocean. As we rode out to the end of the gravel road, we actually rode into the ocean. At the end of the road was a large gravel pad that extended out east and west, and onto the pad they would store equipment. I remember that they had literally cut huge chunks out of the ice for some particular purpose I can't recall. Those huge chunks of ice were almost a wall, where they had been piled up many feet thick and many feet across in diameter. We rode to a point where we could see across those huge chunks of ice, and then this oil company official said to me, "Chaplain, you're just about to watch one of the most exciting things that the oil company men will ever see at Prudhoe Bay." I answered, "What do you mean?" We're right out here at the edge of the Arctic Ocean, and I don't see anything exciting out here. There's not even any drill rigs out here. In fact, there's nothing going out on this dock. We're the only people out here. He said, you're right. But what I want you to look, you'll have to strain your eyes a bit, and you'll see the drill rig on the little bitty island way out there in the Arctic Ocean. If you look close, you can see it with a naked eye, without even using glasses. Oh, I said, yes, Gull Island. The official looked at me. Oh, so you know about Gull Island, do you? Well, I answered, someone told me a few months ago that they had taken a drill rig out to Gull Island, and I had noticed that the orange-colored top on the big rig out there, it just sticks above the horizon on the Arctic Ocean, and I've heard that they are drilling for oil on Gull Island. He said, yes, they are. Not only that, but today we're going to have the first burn from the rig. They've completed the drilling. A burn, in layman's terms, is a method of proof used when an oil field or an oil well is brought in. I was to watch that day what is probably one of the most phenomenal bits of intelligence information that has ever been discovered since the original oil discovery at Prudhoe Bay. However, this was also to be one of the most devastating things that the government of the United States has ever done to the American people in relation to the energy crisis. We sat there for a few minutes, not knowing exactly when the burn would take place, and this oil company official began to explain about Gull Island. It became quite interesting. He told me what I already knew, that the oil companies had been allowed to produce from only a 100-square-mile area of the North Slope of Alaska, yet there are many 100-square-mile areas of land north of the Brooks Mountains and the northernmost mountain range of the United States. North of these mountains, there is an area of about 160 to 180 miles that slopes gradually to sea level at Prudhoe Bay, and then out into the Arctic Ocean. That is the boundary just a short way from the shore of the limit of the 100-square-mile area that the oil companies call Prudhoe Bay. That is the area from which the oil is being allowed to be produced. At maximum flow, the Alaska oil flow will produce 2 million barrels of oil every 24 hours. So there we were, sitting out in the Arctic Ocean, watching a speck on the horizon, a speck called Gull Island. The ARCO official proceeded to explain to me that Gull Island is on the very, very edge of that 100 square miles from which they were allowed to produce. He said to me, Gull Island is marginal. We have been allowed to drill there, but we know that any angle of drilling whatsoever to the north would mean that it would be out of bounds of the oil field from which we have been given permission to produce. I guess you know, Chaplain, that this one pool of oil right here on the north side of Alaska from which we are presently producing can produce oil at the rate of 2 million barrels every 24 hours for the next 20 years without any decrease in production. Now, folks, I think that's important, and I'll come back to that in just a moment. He says, not only that, but it will produce at artesian flow for the next 20 years. Now, I covered an article on Monday's broadcast, folks, from George Crispin, and I'm not going to reread the whole thing, but I think it's very relevant to understand that when these oil wells are developed, these oil fields are developed, they don't necessarily become depleted. George Crispin wrote in an article about Eugene Island, and I covered it last Monday, about it being an underwater mountain located 80 miles off the coast of Louisiana and the Gulf of Mexico. He says, in 1973, oil was struck and offshore platform Eugene 330 was erected. The field began production at 15,000 barrels a day, then gradually fell off, as is normal, to 4,000 barrels a day in 1989. Then came the surprise. It reversed itself and increased production to 13,000 barrels a day. Probable reserves have been increased to 400 million barrels from 60 million. The field appears to be filling from below, and the crude coming up today is from a geological age different from the original crude, which leads to the speculation that the world has limitless supplies of petroleum. In other words, a lot of these oil wells, when they're expected to be depleted, they turn out to be filling up again from below. So this goes to show you, and he concludes this article, and again, if you want to hear this article, you can go into the archives from last Monday's broadcast, this last Monday, because we read it in its entirety. But he says, not only can the doom and gloomers not show us running out of the natural resources we recycle, but now there appears to be good odds of a limitless supply of petroleum working its way up to where we can capture it. And I think that's very important. Continuing with Lindsay's information now. This oil executive was saying what he said. He says, not only that, but it will produce an artesian flow for the next 20 years. That means that this is one of the richest oil fields on Earth. See, the whole point here, folks, is that we are not short on oil. We're not short on oil. And I don't know how, if you've been listening, it can be any clearer than we've made that. We're not. There is no oil shortage, except the one that's being created for us. Continuing with Lindsay's information, he says that the Arco executive continued. After 20 years, he said, we will either inject water or some other liquid into the ground in order to maintain that flow of oil. But we will not have to pump this field for over 20 years. The oil comes out of the ground at about 136 degrees Fahrenheit with 1,600 pounds of artesian pressure. They don't even have to pump it, folks. It's just coming out of the ground. He says we won't even have to pump it for over 20 years. He then further elaborated about the rich oil fields at Prudhoe Bay and stated that they have proven there that there are many other pools of oil on the north slope of Alaska. He also believed that these numerous pools of oil could be produced just as easily as the Prudhoe Bay oil field. Then he told me something else I already knew. He said, Chaplain, there is no energy crisis. There never has been an energy crisis. There never will be an energy crisis. We have as much oil here as in all of Saudi Arabia. If only the oil companies of America were allowed to produce it, we would have no crisis. Oh, we've been told there's a crisis, but there isn't one. On and on that oil company official went while we sat there and idled away the time. The heater was going full blast because of the cold. As we were waiting for the momentous event when we would see black smoke from Gull Island, that would indicate that the burn was taking place and we would have proof of the finding of oil. Then we would go back to the main office and look at the technical data relating to what the oil companies had found that day at Gull Island. There was no set time of day for this oil burn to take place, so as we sat there waiting and watching with hopeful expectancy as to what we might actually see, we talked about many things. We chatted about angle drilling, and he explained to me that they would drill an oil field oftentimes, and after they had gone down so many feet into the ground, they would angle off and sometimes go many miles at an angle. That meant that they could drill many different wells from one gravel pad. After they had drilled those wells, they would call them Christmas trees because that's exactly what they looked like above the ground. He explained on Gull Island, they were drilling straight down because if they drilled at an angle, they would be out of bounds of the area from which the government had allowed them to produce. He then said, what we find today will prove what is on the outskirts of this oil field. Then it happened. I remembered he stopped his conversation very abruptly and picked up his field glasses from beside him on the seat of the truck and exclaimed, look, Chaplain, there it is. We both stepped out of the truck, even though it was very cold outside. I have forgotten whether we even closed the door or not, but both of us were excited. So we looked, straining our eyes to see across to Gull Island over the ocean. They called it Gull Island because the only thing ever known to be on it was a flock of seagulls in the summertime. And there it was, a great cloud of black smoke was going up. It was almost as though a great black bomb had exploded and the cloud grew bigger and bigger. The wind picked up the trail of smoke and threw it to the north, and there it lay. It was like a great big cylinder churning out across the ocean. This surely was an exciting find. There could be no more nonsense about an energy crisis. Surely there couldn't. But I was wrong. I was so very wrong. And folks, we got to take a break here. You're listening to American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks. I'm sharing with you from a book, The Energy Non-Crisis. We're just getting started, folks. But I want to give you Lindsay's toll-free number. His toll-free order number is 800-321-2900. 800-321-2900. I do hope you'll order some of his videotapes. And I hope you'll order... he'll give you the books if you'll just order the videotapes. But at any rate, call the number 800-321-2900. Share this information. Nothing would be better than putting your family and friends in a room and putting on the Energy Non-Crisis videotape and showing them how they've been scammed. What better way to wake people up? Folks, people will wake up when they're the ones being molested. And all of America is being molested right now. Every time they try to fill up their SUVs, every time they fill up their cars to go to work every day. And that's the point. Nothing wakes people up faster than when they're being molested by government. We'll continue this on the other side of the break. Stay with us. I'm Darren Weeks. You're listening to American Exposé. Don't go away. More to come.
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70. You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the internet and following the instructions there to support us. Thank you for listening.
In 1928, Germany required its citizens to register their firearms, making possible Hitler's 1938 Nazi Weapons Act, disarming all Jews. Now ask yourself, what is the real consequence of registration? All in favor of gun control, raise your right hand. Brought to you by Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, America's aggressive civil rights organization, JPFO.org.
Be sure to listen to The Church at Cahuilla every Saturday and Sunday at 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. Pacific Time. The Church at Cahuilla is a Lordship Church under the sole authority of Jesus Christ. You may contact The Church at Cahuilla by calling 559-561-4860. That's 559-561-4860. And let them know how much you're being blessed. Thank you.
And I wanna believe you when you tell me that it'll be okay. Yeah, I try to believe you, but I don't. When you say that it's gonna be, it always turns out to be a different way. I try to believe you.
Welcome back to the broadcast. American Exposé, I'm Darren Weeks. As we continue on here, I'm sharing information from a book called The Energy Non-Crisis, in case you're just joining me. This is Lindsay Williams. He's writing as he's been there on the North Slope of Alaska and seen the oil finds and seen the federal government and state government's efforts to cover them up and to do everything they could to interfere with private industry's production of energy. And for what purpose? As he would say, and as we've been saying all along, the name of the game is control. It's all about control, folks. Continuing here, before the break, we found Lindsay was with an ARCO executive, I don't know if he was an executive. He was an official from ARCO. And they were watching at a distance the oil rig on Gull Island. And when they hit oil, when they discovered oil, when they had the find, the proof of the find was the burn. And when they saw the black smoke come up, they knew they'd discovered something major. And that's where we pick it up here now. It says, he says, as the wind took that huge black cloud farther and farther north, it burned fiercely and seemed to turn an even bigger black, an even deeper black. The ARCO official seemed to have an excitement about him that I had never seen before. He was elated and could hardly contain himself. He did not usually get this way. It was not his nature. This must be a big one, he exclaimed. Something exciting must be happening. Maybe it's another big discovery. He looked and watched and kept looking. He stood there as though he was frozen, but he was too exuberant to freeze. It seemed as though our hands were numb because we could simply not quit watching the size of that big burn, nor could we stop the excitement caused by what we were looking at. At last he looked back at me and said, Chaplain, I think we have just proven something phenomenal, something we have been looking for a long time. Come on, quick, let's go back to the base and look at the technical data. Let's see what we can find about statistics. Chaplain, I think this is going to be exciting. Was that ever an understatement? Lindsay says. We got back into the pickup truck, and he started off very quickly. He drove fast that day. As he did so, he explained to me how you could tell what an oil well is going to produce by the burn, what the volume and the quantity are going to be, and what the pressure and the depth will be. He explained much of the technical details as to how they drilled that well. He himself had followed it very closely because they thought that possibly it might produce another pool of oil. They had hoped it might prove to be as big as the one at Prudhoe Bay. If they could find another pool of oil and prove it, it would be one of the greatest finds in years. So we rode very quickly back to the base and walked into the office. He did not hesitate for one moment to show me what had been proven. He took out the statistics and showed me the papers and let me see the proof of the find. He went from place to place that day with excitement in his voice as he told a few officials to come and look. The three or four officials that he had called gathered around to see what had happened at Gull Island. All the time, I was trying my best to find out what it was in specifics, because after all, I didn't know what those terms meant that he was using. I was a layman, and as a layman and a chaplain, I didn't understand some of the data they were discussing, so I cannot present it here. They were so busy and excited themselves that they did not have time to explain the technicalities to me. However, I could tell by the excitement they were showing and the way that they were expressing themselves that something big had happened. After everyone had left the office, that oil company official said to me, "We have just discovered and proven another pool of oil as big and maybe even bigger than the Prudhoe Bay field. This is phenomenal beyond words." He again said, "There is no energy crisis. Now we can build a second pipeline. Now we can produce not only 2 million barrels of oil every 24 hours, but we can produce 4 million barrels of oil every 24 hours. Chaplain, this is what we as oil company officials have been waiting for." Then suddenly the excitement was wiped off his face as he looked back at me and said, "I hope the federal government doesn't pose any difficulty over this because of the fact that it's located on the very edge of the designated area from which we can produce." Then he looked back again and said, "If this is allowed to be produced, we can build another pipeline, and in another year's time, we can flood America with oil. Alaskan oil. Our own oil. And we won't have to worry about the Arabs. We won't be dependent on any nation on earth. Chaplain, if there are two pools of oil here this big, there are many, many dozens of pools of oil all over the north slope of Alaska." He went on to say, "Chaplain, America has just become energy independent. America has just become energy independent." I do not think that I have ever seen a man so excited as that man was that day, as he explained to me about the find at Gull Island. That day I went on my way rejoicing. My, I was happy. This meant that if we could produce from the entire north slope of Alaska, America would be oil independent. 4 million barrels of oil every 24 hours. From two of the many pools of oil, We don't have to depend on anybody. The energy crisis has just come to a screeching halt. This ought to hit the front page in every newspaper across America. This was the most exciting thing since the original find at Prudhoe Bay. Homes won't go cold anymore. American citizens will not have to be waiting in line for crude oil or gasoline any longer. I think that night I hardly slept, for I had just witnessed one of the most spectacular events since the original find at Prudhoe Bay. I remember that evening as I lay in bed trying to count sheep and trying to find some way to go to sleep. I kept going over all the things that I had seen and what I had been told. In my mind, I kept trying to think about the technical data and visualize it, and to understand some of the statistics I had seen. I thought that I would wake up in the next morning and hear the entire nation of America literally shouting for joy. I thought that no longer would there be any talk of an energy crisis. Yes, we are energy independent. Somehow, in the early hours of the morning, I must have drifted off to sleep with visions of oil burns in my head instead of sugar plums. This means that the energy crisis in America is over. The end of the energy crisis for America. It kept going through my head. For now, they had proven two major pools on the North Slope of Alaska, and this oil official was exactly right, and the other soundings were probably right too. And there would be many pools of oil here. The only thing that they had to do at this point, and we're talking about the government, was to let private enterprise loose. Let them do what American private enterprise can do so gloriously. Let them do what American enterprise has done so gloriously throughout all these years. Just let them have an incentive. And with an incentive like this, gas prices would come down so the industry could run full speed ahead. The trucks would not be left without diesel fuel. There would be plenty of gas for my vehicle. Prices? Tell the Arabs they can have their old oil. We don't need it. American enterprise has again done what they have always been able to do. They have produced. Once again, Yankee ingenuity has come to the aid of the American people. So that night I went to bed dreaming of the glory of our great nation. As a red-blooded American, proud of the fact that the Yankees had produced again, just as they have always have. Yes, I went to bed on a happy note that night. When I woke up the next morning, it was snowing outside. I had to get through the chow line quick. I wanted to eat my breakfast in a hurry to get back there to that camp again. I was quite sure that my excitement was shared by everyone by now, and that by the time I arrived there, the place would be crawling with reporters gathering all the data, for after all, a discovery of this magnitude should be spread all over the country. I kind of wished that I had called up that radio station that had asked me to give them any special information, for this, of course, was phenomenal, the most phenomenal thing I had ever known. I wished I had taken them up on that toll-free call they'd asked me to make when there was something special happening. Oh, how I had wished that I had called John Davis before and told him of this tremendous find. John Davis was with radio station KSRM, and I should have called him so he could announce this wonderful news to the whole world. I wish I had told him that they had just discovered a pool of oil as big or bigger than the one at Prudhoe Bay, so he could put it on the national wire service. I wish I had done that the night before. Just a few hours later, oh, I wish I had done that. What would I have given today if I had only done that yesterday? But I didn't. The fact is, at the time, I don't think the full magnitude of that find had fully registered on me yet. That morning, I finished breakfast quickly. I remember I got in the pickup truck and I cranked it and headed off to the base camp. I didn't even wait for the truck to warm up. This was exciting. This was phenomenal. The American people ought to rejoice over this. I walked into the base camp, and there was nothing exceptional going on. I went by the security guard, and he was just nonchalantly sitting there as if nothing special had taken place. I said, "Sir, where's Mr. So-and-so?" And he said, "He's riding around in his vehicle." I asked, "Can you call him on the radio?" And he said, "Sure." He called him on the radio and said, "Chaplain Williams is here to see you." The man called back with what seemed to be an air of fear in his voice. And he said, "Chaplain Williams? Yes, please, tell him to stay right there and not leave. I need to see him." Tell him to please wait for me in my office. I'll be in immediately. I went to his office and sat down and wondered why it was that on this day the trumpets were not sounding. This was a phenomenal thing, and yet there seemed to be no fuss about it at all. Sure enough, without delay, the oil company official soon walked into his office and closed the door behind him. He looked at me with a frown on his face and said, "Chaplain, what you saw yesterday, don't you ever, as long as you live, let anything out that would tell anyone the data that you saw in those technical sheets." I said, "But sir, that's going to end the energy crisis in America." He said, "No, Chaplain, it's not. Quite to the contrary." As he sat down behind his desk, I noticed that he was very worried, and then he continued, "Chaplain, you weren't supposed to see what I showed you yesterday. I'm sorry I let you go with me out there to watch that burn. I'm even more perturbed that I let you look at the technical data, because you and I might both be in trouble if you ever tell the story of Gull Island." I should stop at this point and state that he did not tell me not to tell the story of Gull Island, but he merely said, "We both may be in trouble if you ever tell it." I watched with my own eyes what I thought I never thought I would see in the United States of America. Maybe in socialist Russia, yet maybe under a dictatorship, but in America? No. After all, this was the country of the people, by the people, for the people. Within a few days after the fine, and with the proof of the fine, proof of a vast amount of oil, I listened as that official told me that the government had ordered the oil company to seal the documents, withdraw the rig, cap the well, and not release the information about the Gull Island find. That oil field is partially under the area that the oil companies were not allowed to produce from. It is in the Arctic Ocean. And microorganisms, microorganisms of that area might be destroyed if an oil spill ever happens. Seal the documents, withdraw the rig, and cap the well. This company official said to me, "Chaplain, that great pool of oil is probably as big as the Prudhoe oil field. It has been proven, drilled into, and tested. We know what is there. And we know the amount that is there, but government has ordered us not to produce that well or reveal any information as to what is at Gull Island." I could hardly believe what I had heard that day. I walked out of the oil company official's office very perturbed, because again, we could be lied to. The American people would be deceived again. The truth would not be told. As I walked out of the office, I realized that I was the only one of about 6 men alive who would even know the truth about Gull Island, or would ever even see the technical data. I was astonished that day because of this restriction on releasing data about the production from beneath a small island out in the Arctic Ocean. This could end the oil crisis, but I had come to the conclusion in my mind with no doubt whatsoever that the federal government would never want that oil produced. It was not the oil companies that ordered the rig removed and the well capped. It was not the oil companies that said we cannot go beyond our 100-mile boundary. It was not the oil companies that said we will not tell the American people the truth. Rather, it was your federal and state government, and my federal and state government. The officials that are supposedly elected by us to represent us for our welfare. Gull Island was capped and the rig was removed, and the truth has never been told. Until now. Gull Island just proved what the oil companies have believed for some time. It's authenticated and seismographic findings. Seismographic testing has indicated that there is as much crude oil in the North Slope of Alaska as in Saudi Arabia. Since the Gull Island find proved to be seismographically correct, then the other testings are also correct. There are many hundreds of square miles of oil under the North Slope of Alaska. To clarify what I'm about to say, let me first reemphasize that the government permitted the oil companies to drill and prove many sites, subsequently making them cap the wells and keep secret the proof of the finds. But they do not allow them to produce from the wells. This is why I've referred to a number of wells having been drilled after I left the North Slope. The only production permitted is from a small area of the North Slope. Gull Island is located 5 miles offshore from Prudhoe Bay. It is in the Beaufort Sea. The chemical structure of the oil at Gull Island is different from that of the oil in Prudhoe Bay, in the Prudhoe Bay field, and the pressure of the field is different, which proves that it is a totally different pool of oil from that at Prudhoe Bay. The Gull Island burn produced 30,000 barrels of oil per day through a 3.5-inch pipe at 900 feet. Three wells have been drilled, proven, and capped at Gull Island. The East Dock well also hit the Gull Island oil pool. You can tell by the chemical structure. For 40 miles to the east of Gull Island, there has not been a single dry hole drilled. Did you hear that, folks? I want to say that again. He says, for 40 miles to the east of Gull Island, there 40 miles now to the east of Gull Island, there has not been a single dry hole drilled, although many wells have been drilled. This shows the immensity of the size of the field. The Gull Island oil find is even larger than the Prudhoe Bay find, which is presently producing more than 2 million barrels of oil every 24 hours. Where is the energy crisis? It certainly isn't on the North Slope of Alaska, so it must only be in Washington, D.C. Now, just in case Gull Island didn't blow your mind, try this on for size. Only recently, just west of Gull Island, the Kuparuk oil field has been drilled. Again, this is totally separate. A totally separate pool of oil from either the Prudhoe Bay field or the Gull Island field. The chemical makeup of the field and the pressure of the field is different from the others, proving it to be a totally separate pool of oil. In an entirely different area of the North Slope than the 100 square mile area of the Prudhoe Bay field, the Kuparuk field is approximately 60 miles long and 30 miles wide and contains approximately the same amount of oil as the Prudhoe Bay field. The oil in the Kuparuk field is at least 6,000 foot depth, and there is a 300 feet oil sand. The field pressure is 900 pounds at wellhead, and test wells have flowed at 900 barrels a day at normal flow pressure. It is projected that 800 to 1,400 wells will be drilled into the Kuparuk field. From 1973 through 1980, we were being told continually that America was in the midst of a major energy crisis, yet no oil production was allowed from the Kuparuk field. It wasn't until 1981 that permission was finally granted for the production. Why the delay, if there really was a crisis? The reason Mr. X made the statement that there is as much crude oil on the North Slope of Alaska as in all of Saudi Arabia is because the oil companies have drilled all over the North Slope and have proven there is as much oil there, but they still are only allowed to produce from the small area. See, they're being allowed to drill, but then they're not being allowed to produce what they find. The North Slope is everything in Alaska north of the Brooks Mountains. Prudhoe Bay is a very small portion of this enormous area. Just remember the size of Alaska as we illustrated earlier. After the first edition of the book, The Energy Non-Crisis, came out, many people requested additional technical data, and that, therefore they added a chapter called If Gull Island Didn't Blow Your Mind, This Will. He says, as I was dictating this additional material, I had the opportunity of being with a gentleman who is a speculator in oil leases. He made a statement to me as he looked over an oath I was making public that every oil speculator in America who is interested in Alaskan oil leases should get a copy of this, because he had never seen such pertinent information in print before. So what you have just heard will excite many oil speculators and cause them to search the maps and watch for the latest releases. Possibly you have heard it stated that the Alaskan crude oil has such a high sulfur content that it cannot be refined by most oil refineries in the U.S. We are being told this is the reason why the Alaskan oil is not helping to solve America's energy crisis. This is also the excuse that is being used for shipping Alaska crude to other countries. It has also been reported that major power companies are even telling this to their customers in their monthly statement inserts as a means to justify the need for their rate increases. Well, here's a statistic that should silence those false claims and blow the lid off that phony excuse of too much sulfur in the Alaskan crude. An August 11, 1980 analysis of Prudhoe Bay crude oil which is flowing in the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline, reads as follows. Sulfur content, only 0.9%. 0.9%. Flash point of oil, 35 degrees Fahrenheit. Wax content, 6%. Asphalt content, 2%. Crude oil freeze temperature, better known as pour point, 15 degrees Fahrenheit. The sulfur content of Prudhoe Bay, Alaskan oil, is low in comparison to oil from other sources in the U.S., as well as many foreign oils. In other words, the Alaskan Prudhoe Bay oil can be refined by any major refinery in America without damage to the ecology. This means, then, that the widely publicized excuse of too high a sulfur content is simply not true. Therefore, it is just one more link in the long chain of falsehoods that we are being asked to believe as Americans. An energy crisis? The following is a comparison between three oil fields on the North Slope of Alaska, which has been drilled into with numerous wells tested and proven. Prudhoe Bay can produce 2 million barrels of oil every 24 hours for 20 to 40 years at artesian pressure. Imagine what the production of Cooperook and Gull Island, those fields, could be. Okay, he's got a chart here, and I'm going to try to make this as clear as possible, and we're running out of time, so I have to hurry. Prudhoe Bay is 600 feet of pay zone. 600 feet. It has a square mileage of 100 square miles. Cooperook is 300 feet, which is half deep, but it's twice the size. The area of the field is twice the size of Prudhoe Bay. Now, Gull Island, by comparison between Cooperook and Prudhoe Bay, remember, Prudhoe Bay was 600 feet, Cooperook was 300 feet deep. Gull Island is 1,200 feet deep. You see how much it's twice as deep as Prudhoe Bay, and it's at least four times the size of Prudhoe Bay. And estimates are that it is the richest oil field, ladies and gentlemen. Estimates are that it is the richest oil field on the face of the earth. On the face of the earth, and yet the oil companies are not being allowed to produce it. Lindsay says, my 2.5 years as chaplain on the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline was now coming to a conclusion. I had the distinction of being the first chaplain as assigned to the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline, and I have been the only chaplain assigned to the northern sector of that pipeline, which included Prudhoe Bay oil field. When I first went there, I had gone as an innocent bystander, and originally the oil companies had not even wanted a chaplain. Through much persuasion, I had obtained permission to be allowed in the work camps to help men spiritually. As stated earlier, the oil companies never paid me any salary of any kind. After 2.5 years of watching, observing, hearing, and seeing, I was leaving the pipeline as a man with some definite opinions because of all that had happened. Now, it was all over. 2.5 years of many, many experiences. Gull Island was only a matter of a few months behind me, and the construction phase of the pipeline was completed. Oil had flowed on time, despite all that I had seen in the attempts to stop it. Oil was now being shipped out of Valdez into the lower 48 states to eventually wind up in the gas tanks of America. That 4-foot pipe was carrying a little over 1 million barrels of oil every 24 hours, and that oil flow would increase with the completion of different phases of the Valdez terminal. Drilling at Prudhoe Bay was to continue for quite a few years, and there was a considerable workforce left there, but up and down that 800-mile stretch where the men had been in camps, they were now ghost towns. Many of the men went back home, and some stayed in the state of Alaska. Those crews who had numbered thousands were now reduced to a few men at each pump station, and those pumps up and down that 800-mile line were all computerized, operated out of a great computer center in Valdez. The big valves were automatically controlled, and the pump stations were automatic. There was only a monitoring system in each pump station. The oil was successfully flowing. There had been no leaks except those caused by sabotage, and I have heard very little in the way of refuting many incidents that I have seen in the last 6 to 9 months on the construction of the pipeline. Today, the caribou are migrating as usual. The geese are coming back each spring. I have watched them all consistently, for although I'm no longer the chaplain to the oil pipeline, I am still a missionary to Alaska. Alaska is my adopted home, and I have watched the geese come in by the thousands. Birds of many kinds migrate to the North Slope of Alaska, and the Arctic Ocean is the same as always. In other words, this thing has not done any damage to the ecology. As I look back over the years, I thought, well, surely things will change. Undoubtedly, after some period of time, there will be someone who will tell the American people the story. The truth will be revealed. It will be known just how much oil there is on the North Slope of Alaska. Surely the natives of Alaska and even the government are interested in the royalties that could come from that oil. However, instead of the energy crisis being reduced and the truth being revealed, that energy crisis has gotten worse. Then I began to hear more and more about the supposed reasons why the North Slope of Alaskan oil could not come to the lower 48 states and why we were not getting that gasoline in our tanks out of the Midwest. I heard rumors as to the excessive sulfur content in the Alaskan oil, and heard it more and more as I began to travel across America in those months that I was in the lower 48 on speaking engagements. Because of my associations with Alaska, people kept telling me about the high content of sulfur, that it was so bad it could not be used in the lower 48 states. Over and over again, I kept hearing about that the lower 48 refineries could not produce the oil from Alaska. And we have seen, as we have seen in the last chapter, that this propaganda is utter nonsense. And folks, I'm sorry that we have to go, unfortunately. But I hope you're seeing the truth, the lies that are being exposed here. And we urge you to join us on Monday, as I'll have hopefully the Law of the Seas Treaty that I'll be covering. The 800 number to order Lindsay's material is 800-321-2900. That's 800-321-2900. God bless you, folks. We'll see you later. Pray for this republic and do what you can to restore it.
When you turn and find that you're all alone, and the velvet wall at night moves in, wraps around you like a wall of stone, just when your final prayer has flown, love will get there. When a mother's touch is far away, you close your eyes and you hear a voice whispering, it'll be okay. Just hold on for one more day. Love will get there.
Most Americans want our government to control our borders, especially since 9/11. But amazingly, some political leaders want to do away with borders entirely, whether the American people agree or not. And they have a serious plan for accomplishing their aims while deceiving the public. It's called the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA, a huge power grab. If Congress approves the FTAA,